Good morning and welcome to Neocotti View. I'm Peter Newman. Recently, the Manzanita City Council passed a plastic bag ban, and I was interested when that happened. Think I need to talk to somebody about that, but I wasn't sure who to talk to, and the name Megan Ponder kept coming up. So Megan is with us this morning. Good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Peter. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's just launch into that. I want to find out more about you, but bag ban.
Yes. Manzanita did it.
How'd they do it?
Well, my understanding is that this started about a year ago. It was a couple of community members in Manzanita, Jane Bears and Michael McGinnis, just started a conversation. I think it was inspired by the plastic pollution Jan was seeing on the beach. And Michael is a Cardam board member. And so they started discussing possible solutions to the problem, and the idea of a plastic bag ban came up. I actually didn't join the group until this last spring. I just read in the paper about the effort, and they had done all the major legwork by the time I joined them. They had, you know, gone around to businesses and had business support in the community. They had talked to the community and collected signatures in support of the measure. I really just helped them with the technical aspect of developing an ordinance that was right for Manzanita and that was consistent with other Oregon policies.
Well, what it would seem to me that what you'd really like is, you know, whole communities, Nehalem, Wheeler, the state, the feds, everybody doing this
sort
of thing. Is it a matter of the we don't want the perfect to be the enemy of the good, and you get done what you can do? Is that thinking behind that?
Well, you know, I would love to see a national policy on this, but I think, with a lot of things these days, if we wait on the federal government to get things done, we might be waiting for a while. And I think, you know, Manzanita is a perfect place to start for the North Coast. It's where most of the shopping in the region is done, and this was just a easy home run for Manzanita an opportunity for Manzanita to be a leader on this.
It seems like it's such a relatively modest thing. I mean, okay, I can't get my plastic bag, but I bring my reusable bag, or I don't even have a bag at all sometimes because we don't need bags for everything. What is the objection to a bag ban?
You know, that's a good question. There are a lot of alternatives to those single-use plastic bags. The single-use plastic bag is also just it represents kind of the problem in general. The problem being that there are a lot of new plastic packaging uses on the market that used to not be there. You know, in the last 50 years, we've seen a dramatic increase in plastic production. And the majority, the largest market for plastic is disposable plastic packaging. So we're seeing more and more uses for this material that's designed to last forever and yet only used for seconds. And we're seeing the impact on our beaches and our oceans and our waterways, you know, and on our wildlife and our food. You know, communities around the world are really feeling the impacts of plastic pollution.
Like just about everybody else, I've opened a mail order package and gotten the thing that I ordered out there and just screamed my head off at how this little thing is encased in this big block of plastic. What do we do about that? I mean, can an ordinance or a law be written, especially since a lot of this stuff is shippable items? Because plastic bags are one thing, but as you say, there is plastic all over the place, and a lot of it just doesn't get used for very long. It's just there to presumably protect the object being shipped.
Yeah, I would say stay frustrated, you know, and then channel that into some action. You know, I think there are a handful of policy tools, I think, on the local and state or maybe even on the federal level that we can employ. But on the individual level, there are other things you can do. You can contact the manufacturer or the distributor or the retailer. You know, we've seen lots of success with people getting mad at retailers about certain items on the shelf. Walmart, for example, you know, took major effort to remove toxins from a lot of products after consumer outrage. So I think there is a place for that. Contact manufacturers, tell them you want, you know, different packaging. Contact distributors, whether it's Amazon or retailers, and tell them you don't like the way the products are coming to you. Other than that, I think that people individually can do a lot to decrease their plastic footprint. You know, there are alternatives to single-use plastics. It requires some minor behavior changes in some instances, sometimes a larger change. And other than that, I would say, you know, get involved with your community efforts. Support organizations like Artem who are working to help their community rethink waste. You know, I think not only will you be having a major impact locally, but you'll feel better. You know, there are organizations locally that are working to kind of change the narrative on that. And I think nothing kind of combats that frustration more than some positive action.
Is there evidence that sort of action is working? I mean, you mentioned Amazon, which is the obvious target of some of this, you know, and I think I've seen some of the Amazon packaging improve, but then something comes along that I've ordered, and yes, I do order from Amazon, and then I just start screaming again. And so there seems to be a certain amount of inconsistency in their approach.
For sure. You know, I just recently got back from a trip in Asia, a research trip on the plastic pollution issue. And, you know, while it was very intense and very heavy, I left feeling more inspired than depressed. And that was primarily because of the local action I saw everywhere I went. There are small community-based organizations that are working on this issue. And I think that we can be inspired by grassroots efforts, and it does lead to broader change. But yeah, I think ultimately we need to demand more from the producers of this. And that's going to be no small thing. You know, the plastic production companies, the people that are producing these materials, it's the largest and most powerful corporations in the world. It's the oil and gas industry. It's the fast mover consuming goods industry. These are major global brands and major global industries with powerful resources. And their main goal is to increase market share, sell more plastic materials. So it's a big battle, but you know, it's one that we should take a stand on and say that we want things differently.
Our guest this morning on Niakate View is Megan Ponder. Relatively new to our area, right?
That's right.
When did you arrive?
Well, about 2 years ago, we got a place here in Nehalem, and been here about full time about 8 months.
Okay, and you were mentioning a trip to Asia, and I keep thinking, whenever I hear talk of plastic in Asia, I also make the leap to those, what do you want to call them, those islands or gloppy things that are out there in the ocean. So those are... But then I'll read an article that suggests that, at least if they're not unreal, that you have to put a little asterisk by them. So would you please describe what they are? Because I think there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of just sort of half information about what those things are.
I think that's a great question. You know, I was lucky enough about 6 years ago to be able to sail from Namibia to Uruguay to study plastic pollution in the South Atlantic Gyre. And, you know, I think a misconception of many is that you're going to reach this island and be on it. It's floating plastic the size of Texas. We've all heard and read the different descriptions of it. The reality is when you get out there, there's no real defining start or middle or end. You're just kind of, you're in slow-moving water, which is why the material collects there. And most of the material out in the ocean has been out there for a very long time, and it's degraded, so it's broken down into small pieces. Now, plastic has a lot of different densities and does a lot of different things in water, so you can't really get a full view just by looking at the surface level. But in trawling and taking samples, we did find microplastics. So these are very, very small pieces of plastic. This is similar to what you would see on the beach, sometimes broken down pieces of plastic. Now, this is a problem, and I'm not arguing that. I mean, there's lots of studies that have come out that have shown kind of the impact of this material on wildlife, you know, some staggering statistics around the prevalence of this material and how it attracts toxins in the water. But what I've seen on my trips, and I think what new science is showing us, and I think it makes sense, is that the majority of plastic pollution is really along the coastlines. So it does make its way out there, but the majority of it is being polluted and littered on land, and it's finding its ways through riverways and other waterways out into the coast and going out into the ocean. Now, why is this important? This is important because we can stem the flow. If we, you know, increase collection and recycling of these materials, we can keep them from going out into the ocean. The problem here is more and more plastic products that are being put on the shelves are low-value plastics. And this is a problem globally. What do I mean by this? Well, plastic packaging is bottles, bags, films, pouches. More and more we're seeing. Anyone can just walk down the grocery store, and we've seen kind of the evolution of packaging from glass to rigid plastics, and now we're seeing more and more of these kind of flexible pouch packaging. So what happens? When these materials are sold in kind of emerging economies, and that's a major growth market for these companies in Asia and Africa and elsewhere, they're a lot of times selling these products in communities that don't have formalized collection systems. So recycling across the world largely depends on informal recycling collection, which is market-driven. That means that if a product has value, is a high-value material, like metals, some high-value plastics like PET or HDPE, it will be pulled out of the waste stream. Even if it's littered onto the ground, it will be pulled out because it has a cash value. Now, as more and more of our materials go to low value, this material doesn't get picked up, and it gets washed into the waterways and into the system. In the United States, this material is a problem too. So material generally flows in recycling. It's collected and it's exported primarily to China. In the United States, about 70% of our plastic that's collected for recycling is exported to China. Now, when we have low-value plastics that don't have value, a couple of things happen. One, they're harder for many recycling facilities to sort out. They cost more money to sort out. So they get bundled in with other plastic bales, or they're contaminating paper bales. When they go over to other countries, again, they're causing problems for the people that have to process and sort them there.
I don't think this is a deviation from this subject, but I've got to ask you, since you talk about sorting and high value and low value, one of the frustrating things about plastics and recycling it is to go to the recycling center, whether it be Cardam or any place, and you've got your ones and your twos and your fives, and you throw up your hands and say, sometimes I can read it and sometimes I can't, and boy, that five sure looks, or there's a description and the description matches this product, or two descriptions match the same kind of product. Is there any way to simplify that so that those of us who merely want to, and I don't use the word merely lightly, recycle plastics can just kind of say, okay, I know I've got to recycle this, I just don't quite know what bin to put it in. That really shouldn't be the barrier to recycling.
No, I agree. I mean, we're doing a lot of work on behalf of the plastic industry, I think. I think Cardam is a great example. I mean, they are producing high-value bales that go to market primarily because of that high level of sorting. So we are doing a lot of work on the front end when we go to a place like Cardam to sort everything out. But there's a reason for that. And some of that is what I kind of just tried to describe, that, when you mix up plastics, you really run into a lot of problems. The value of plastic comes from separated resins. And some of those are inherently higher value than others. I think a simple solution would be, let's get rid of these low-value plastics that don't really have any value and stop, putting so much time and energy trying to figure out the best way to manage a material that's problematic for everyone, and really focus on these high-value materials that have a place in recycling, have a place in managing these materials.
I think there's a prospect of banning some of that because... Yeah, some of the packaging, it's barely packaging anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity for us to start looking at that material for sure. On the West Coast, globally, we're seeing a major change here coming up. China in July just announced that they would no longer be accepting imports of certain waste materials, including mixed paper and post-consumer plastics. So this will have huge ramifications for the global recycling system, especially as it relates to plastics.
Our guest this morning on Neocon View is Megan Ponder, relatively new to our area, and, by the way, one of the newest of board members of Cardam. You've mentioned Cardam a couple times, so let's dive in. How's the Cardam business doing? Because as you say, recycling has had its ups and downs over the years, and some of the things that we've been asked to recycle don't have the economic value. So I guess what I'm asking is recycling itself sustainable?
Well, I think you asked a couple of questions there, and let me just back up a little bit and go to Cardam. You know, I think, first of all, aren't we so lucky to have Cardam? I mean, what an amazing community resource. It really is. And not just from a recycling standpoint. I mean, it is a premier hub for recycling on the North Coast. But a
tourist destination.
Oh, absolutely. I take people there all the time. In fact, the first time I ever went to Cardam, I was, you know, visiting the coast, and somebody took me there. I mean, it's a tourist destination. It's a community gathering spot. I can't tell you how many people I've met since moving here, just, you know, going to Cardam while I'm sorting out my recyclables, talking to people, and it's a hub. It's a great place. But Cardam is doing great. You know, they just celebrated 20 years in business. This year is the 20th anniversary. We just had our fashion show, which was a huge hit. And yeah, recycling is changing. Fortunately, Cardam, one of the great things about Cardam and the reason why it's such a model for so many communities is that it doesn't just focus on the trash or even the recycling aspect. There's a reuse store there where they divert materials from the waste stream and sell it to go on to have a longer life in someone else's hands, and they have a diverse model. And recycling is shifting, and the way that we have been doing things, it's going to have to change. But Cardam's going to be looking forward to how to lead the next 20 years, and it'll require thinking about things differently. But I think Cardam is in a unique and positive place to do that.
How did you get into the, what should we call it, the eco biz?
The waste world?
The waste world. How do you get into garbage?
How did I get into garbage? Well, I started working in public policy in Portland and worked for a local elected who oversaw the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, which managed waste and recycling. I also worked with the mayor on the plastic bag ban in Portland. I was lucky enough to work on the compost program at the City of Portland, bringing food waste and yard waste collection door to door. So just in local government primarily. I think waste is an exciting field to be in. You know, it's very tangible. It's something that everyone has a relationship with, whether they know it or not. And it's ripe for improvement. There's lots of places we need to engage on waste.
And it is largely for most of us, it is a local issue, and it's where we
absolutely
we deal with it locally when we put our garbage out. We do it when we recycle, and I suppose when we go vote on a ban of some kind. But are there acts that we can do beyond that, beyond say the local level? I mean, I realize the doing something at the federal level these days is extremely difficult. But can we set our sights a little higher?
Yeah, and I don't want to rule out federal. You know, I haven't lost all hope here. You know, I think absolutely there's room for improvement, and I think just starting a broader conversation with policymakers on this is where we need to go. I mean, there's extended producer responsibility efforts. There are multiple programs throughout the United States. There's extended producer responsibility in BC that focuses on packaging. And what these programs do is, you know, they shift the responsibility of paying for and managing these recycling and collection programs from local governments, from taxpayers, onto the producer. And so that does two things. It kind of shifts the responsibility to the producer, while it also provides an incentive for the producer to start thinking about the design of the packaging in the first place.
Could we institute legislation or regulations that would require a producer of a product to package properly? And I know in some extent we already do.
Absolutely.
But can we take it further?
Absolutely, we can. Yeah.
What would be step one for you?
You know, I'm coming off this trip where I really saw more than anything that the number one problem facing much of the world right now are these low-value plastic packaging these sachets, these flexible pouches. I would start there. I think that's step one. There's no place for them in our waste management system. They can't be easily sorted out. They don't belong in the recycling stream to begin with because they can't be easily recycled. Often they're made from multiple different kinds of materials. They're hard to sort out, and once they do get in the waste stream or exported to other countries, they have no value and they're not getting picked out for recycling. I think that's the number one, from a plastic pollution standpoint, the number one problem facing the globe.
So why not just treat it as we do other garbage, put it in a landfill and just let it be? That seems to be the attitude that's worked with different substances for, I don't know, hundreds and thousands of years. Why not just toss it away?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, I think we need to be really honest about what our goals are. If our goals are to divert from the landfill, this material doesn't cut it because it's not recyclable. It often ends up in recycling streams because more and more communities are moving to the large blue bin that collects all material. And while a lot of times these low-value plastics aren't accepted curbside, people generally want to do the right thing. You know, there's a lot of recycling, hopeful recycling that goes on. You know, people aren't sure if something is recyclable, so they're just going to go ahead and put it in the bin. So it gets in the system. We are unable to pull it out effectively and to get it to the landfill if that's where it needs to go. But I would argue that we can do better than that. We have invested lots of money into this, you know, and community resources and businesses into recycling in this country. And I think that it's a shame for this one low-value product to compromise all the progress we've made in recycling across the country.
Well, I guess I should ask the question another way then. What's wrong with a landfill other than the fact that you just can't keep doing it?
You know, I'm probably going to get picked on for this because I there's a lot of reasons why you want to divert material from the landfill. I mean, recycling, the goal of recycling is not just to divert from the landfill. It's to, you know, reduce the impacts from production, to take a material and reuse it in the production of a new material. Recycling is nothing more than taking a material and making it an input for new manufacturing process. So we don't have to mine and produce more fossil fuels for production. So it's to replace the production impacts. That's the main reason why we want to recycle. If the material cannot do that, I would argue the proper place for it is the landfill. It's better than being landborne or in our waterways or oceans.
So what about in your personal life? Are there things you do that the rest of us don't do because you have the secret handshake, you know how to do it? And what would you advise to make us all a little bit better as consumers of hopefully recycled material?
Well, you know, I'm constantly inspired by friends and community members. I mean, this community is very engaged on this issue. There are all kinds of people in this community that are choosing alternatives to single-use plastics and consumption patterns in general. I think, you know, just to step back, this is a larger issue of consumption. Personally, no, I don't have the secret. I think that it's actually putting too much pressure on the individual to say that you have to solve this problem in your own action. I mean, you've brought it up several times. What can we do as far as some kind of policy? I think it's a mixture of two. I think that we have to personally take responsibility and make changes in our own lifestyle where appropriate, but we shouldn't be responsible for having to come up with alternatives when to a system that's rigged. You know, that everywhere we go, these products are available, sometimes without alternatives.
In fact, I was recycling today, as a matter of fact, and I noticed one of the little signs that was up said no plastic bags. Because I guess those plastic bags are pretty worthless. That's a worthless commodity from a recycling point of view.
Yeah,
right?
You know, Cardam hasn't accepted plastic bags for recycling for a few years now. And that's a big driver of lots of these plastic bag policies across the country. They are of low value. Most of the time it's more expensive to collect and process and deliver it to a market than it is to landfill. And if they are accepted, they cause lots of problems. If they do get into the recycling stream, they cause lots of problems. They gum up machinery. Material recovery facilities that I've talked to in the Portland area said up to 30% of their labor cost was stopping and having someone physically go up and cut out these plastic bags out of the machinery. They're problematic. And that's, again, the number one takeaway I hope your listeners get today is that, you know, there are problematic, low-value plastic materials that are causing problem all along the waste stream. And they're causing problems in the recycling sector as well.
Any blowback from people? Have you heard saying, oh, my life is so much more difficult now that I won't be able to recycle, either from here or other communities that have been this way before? Are there objections, and how do you meet them?
You know, I meet very few fans of plastic packaging, with the exception of the plastic industry. You know, they don't like these policies at all, but they better get used to it, because more and more people are concerned about this. More and more people, unfortunately, are feeling the impacts. And more people are calling for change.
And for some, I suppose the alternative is they're handed a paper bag. Do you have any issues with paper bags?
Well, of course, there are impacts with paper bags, for sure. You know, the one thing that I would point to in this community is that paper bags are readily accepted for recycling, and easily recyclable. But you're right. You know, there are production impacts from forest practices, from plastic, from paper bags. Bringing your own bag is the preferred alternative here. And it's relatively easy to do. You know, it's something that it takes a few reminders, but once you get in the habit of it, and for me personally, I'd much rather carry two or three big reusable bags out of the store than, you know, 12 paper or plastic bags. It's becoming a convenience thing for me. It's kind of flipped it around. It's much more convenient for me to bring my own bag than it is to rely on paper or plastic.
They're higher quality bags, for one thing. You're not going to have them break. And what really infuriates me is when I see a supermarket double bagging. I mean, that's sort of like insult to injury when they one plastic bag is enough. We're going to double bag this guy.
Absolutely. And I would say, you know, across the country, there are a lot of policies around single-use bags in general, not just plastic. So the most popular policy across the United States would be a plastic bag ban accompanied with a charge on paper bags. And the state of California, just in 2016, passed a law. And so what we've seen, these kind of policies, one of the major outcomes is just that second, if it's a charge on paper bag or a charge on plastic bags, as some community has, it's that second to consider, both from the clerk who's bagging things and from the consumer. Do you need a bag today? You know, I mean, it used to be you went into a drugstore and bought a toothbrush and they put it in a plastic bag. If there's a policy or a charge or a pause there, do you need a bag today? The question often is no, you don't.
Well, I see that as maybe the next little bit of work that you might be working on is...
Am I hearing that you would like for me to put a charge on all bags in this in the area? All right,
yes.
Peter, I'll take that into consideration.
I would like to see that. We are leaving you with that charge this day on Neocony View. Our guest this morning on Neocony View is Megan Ponder, who is one of those many fine people responsible for helping us, hopefully, to eliminate plastic bags in the north part of Tillamook County, and then hopefully beyond there. Carry on.
You
have
you
your charge.
Much. Thank you, Peter.
And we will see you next month on Neocony View.